You're listening to Thinking Outside the Bud, where we speak with entrepreneurs, investors, thought leaders, researchers, advocates, and policymakers who are finding new and exciting ways for cannabis to positively impact business, society, and culture. And now, here is your host, business coach, Bruce Eckfeldt.
Are you a CEO looking to scale your company faster and easier? Check out Thrive Roundtable. Thrive combines a moderated peer group mastermind, expert one-on-one coaching, access to proven growth tools, and a 24/7 support community. Created by Inc. award-winning CEO and certified scaling up business coach, Bruce Eckfeldt, Thrive will help you grow your business more quickly and with less drama. For details on the program, visit Eckfeldt.com/thrive. That's Eckfeldt.com/thrive.
Welcome, everyone. This is Thinking Outside the Bud. I'm Bruce Eckfeldt. I'm your host. And our guest today is John Malave. He is CEO at QA Canna. They're a quality assurance and compliance consultancy. They help cannabis companies navigate the troubled and sometimes difficult waters of dealing with regulatory issues, compliance issues. It's going to be a fascinating topic. I think this is a big factor in cannabis. It's a big factor in the industry. It's really shaped the way the industry has played out. We've got state by state regulations, with international stuff, we have even more regulations there. And John is an expert in that. So we're interested in getting his insight and advice on this. I think this is going to be a fun conversation, but also a very educational one. With that, John, welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
So why don't we start with background? What were you doing professionally? How did you get into cannabis? And then we can talk a little bit about the work that you're doing today. Give us the backstory.
So historically, I come from pharmaceutical, medical devices, other highly regulated industries. Started out as a chemist, then have been in quality assurance for the past 16, 17 years almost. Mm-hmm. So I came into cannabis because I've always been an advocate, probably a self-medicator, since I've been young, I think as a lot of people in this industry have been, and just have always known that there's been a lot of propaganda, a lot of misleading. The real story about it hasn't really been out there. And, you know, having always been a scientist by education, mm-hmm. by occupation, have always tried to find the data to kind of support what I have, experienced and felt anecdotally, the positives of cannabis and things and how it can actually help someone's well-being or help other people in a lot of respects and shouldn't have the negative stigma that it had attached to it. So it really was, I guess, a cultural kind of thing, that I utilized for self-medicating. And then as some of the science started to come about, and obviously it was from outside of the U.S. usually, it kind of supported the positions that I had, experienced and that I had observed in, through friends and society and things like that.
Yeah. And so tell me about QA Canna. How did that come about? What was that? Was that a strategic decision you made at one point? Did you find yourself kind of just getting involved? What was the founding kind of story for QA Canna?
I actually had a friend and a colleague that I used to just always talk to. And I think at that time, California was talking about, they were already medically legal. And uh-huh. they were talking about going recreational. And I was like, this industry is going to be regulated.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know to what extent it was going to be regulated, how it would be regulated, because there was no precedent set prior to that, right? There was nothing that came out of such illegality for so many years and then basically moved into this framework of where the states were making it legal, but it was still illegal at a federal landscape. But I just knew that it was going to, internally, that it was going to be legal in some manner. And it was going to be regulated. And I was like, well, this is just leveraging my experience that I utilize within pharmaceuticals and medical devices and things like that and repurposing them and bringing them into this space. Yeah. All the things that we know about quality principles and, producing safe and effective products that have integrity and ultimately end user safety and patient safety. Those are all things right in my wheelhouse. So I was like, this is a no-brainer for me. So about 3 years ago, I started doing some market research, had reached out to a couple of closer confidants that were in this space and asked them about what they thought about what I wanted to bring to the table in this respect. And they said, you know, you're probably a few years ahead of time, but you need to get into the space now. And really, that's a lot of the initial time with QA kind of formulating it was a lot of spinning wheels and not gaining as much traction. So, you know, you had to find a way to essentially differentiate yourself because you weren't gaining traction in what you do because there's no regulatory structure in a lot of respects.
Yeah.
It was very fragmented and, you know, still is fragmented, obviously, but there just wasn't a need per se. People love what you're saying. People, you know, when you explain it to them, they desire what you're saying because it makes their product better and you know, they care about the product that's going out into the market, but there's no mandate for it. So, you know, I think it plays into the part that there's a misconception that everybody in this space is making money hand over fist. And that's just not just the case.
Raining money. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, like more people are probably broke and surviving in this space and just trying to stay afloat than many realize on the outside.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about this regulatory kind of context or the environment that cannabis operates within, because it's a little complicated. Talk to us about kind of, let's go from kind of the biggest down, kind of international level regulation, federal, and then the state and local. How, like, what kind of comes into play when you start thinking about, you know, regulation, compliance, quality assurance, you know, mandated quality assurance at those different levels? What's kind of the dynamic at this point in this industry?
Well, the dynamic is that people don't really, I mean, when you're talking about the U.S., because the U.S. landscape is obviously different than, say, Canada, which is regulated by Health Canada, which regulates their pharmaceuticals and their dietary supplements and things like that. So they have a formal regulatory structure that, you know, might not be up to par to where it needs to be, but it's all about continuous improvement. So those are things that are going to be revised and they're going to have lessons learned and they're going to change in that manner. And it really goes for any country that's adopting these practices, whether it's, you know, Germany or anybody else. They're looking at this as this is an industry just like any other highly regulated industry. We have to worry about consumer safety, product safety, you know, product integrity and things like that. So we're going to use the tools that we have in place for other industries and utilize them for, you know, repurpose them and utilize them for cannabis. The U.S. it's very different, obviously, because it's put down to the states, the federal level. We could talk about where I think it's going to be going, but right now, the federal level, their hands are off of it in that respect. It's still obviously illegal. And, you know, the states really, from my experience, don't have the experience and the expertise, should I say, for lack of a better term right now, to effectively manage such an industry. It's very hard to take something that needs to be so highly regulated. It really needs to be, because the fact is these are going into patients. These are people that are compromised health-wise. And essentially doing all of the things, or making sure that these companies are doing all the things that they need to do in order to produce safe and effective products.
Yeah.
So it's the fragmentation, the lack of, I'm going to say knowledge base, not that it's not out there, but the people that are actually driving it, the lack of knowledge has really made sometimes I just use the word an egregious failure within the state, state of cannabis within the United States, because there's just so much consumer safety factors out there that are just exposed that it's unreal. It sometimes boggles my mind to think about it, because I'm just like, coming from a quality perspective, it's just like, I'm appalled sometimes that it's allowed to go in the manner that it's gone for so many years in a lot of these medical programs.
Yeah, so a lot of work to do, and most likely a lot of changes going forward. When we're talking about quality and compliance, what is it that we're really, how does this practically work? Like, how does the regulatory process work? What do companies do to become compliant? How do they stay compliant? I mean, from a operational point of view, how does this play out?
Well, you know, people bring up compliance a lot, and compliance is a loose term, right?
Yeah.
If I come into cannabis and say that your regulations are that your signage needs to be in red and your signs are in red, well, then you're compliant. So compliance is loose. It doesn't really tell you, you know, how effectively somebody is in a state of control within their operations. Mm-hmm. That's basically set about by the regulations, the rules by which these companies need to adhere to. Now, when you're talking about quality, in every other regulated industry, whether it's aerospace or food or pharma or med device, they all have quality systems and quality departments in play, because that's really the the safety net of the organization. Basically, it's like their checks and balances, ensuring that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, ensuring that they're not breaking the rules, so to say. Yep. And essentially, any other problems that are internally happening are being disseminated up to upper management. And upper management has visibility on them. So ultimately, they're the real decision makers. And they're the ones that are essentially going to say, okay, this is what we need to do so we can, you know, comply with the current regulations that are in place. So right now, when you talk about compliance, sometimes the regulations are just so deficient, egregiously deficient, that it doesn't matter whether they're compliant or not. The fact is, you're still probably putting out adulterated products. And, yeah. And the fact is that, you know, these doctors are talking about prescribing medications and stuff like that, but I think it puts them in a kind of a weird position because they're basically prescribing medication that isn't really up to par of what they're used to prescribing. Mm. Not saying that cannabis isn't effective, but essentially that it's just likely in some manner adulterated because it's not processed within a state of control from the very beginning, from raw materials coming in to the manufacturing processes to distribution and things like that.
Yeah.
So quality really ensures that the doctor or the end user is actually getting a consistent quality product that's expected throughout the whole life cycle and manufacturing process of that product itself.
Yeah. And when you say adulterated, we're looking at things that are introduced to the product either through growing and pesticides and treatments and things that happen on the plant itself to the processing, the equipment, correct, and the chemicals that are used in processing. And are those residual? Do they have harmful effects? To what level, concentration, stuff like that?
Right. That's correct. So, yeah, you know, people bring up pesticides and stuff and they say, well, pesticides are used in food and stuff like that. But, you know, usually with food, you can wash off your food or something like that if it's done externally. And I'm not justifying and saying that all pesticide use is just safe and it's the best practice. I'm just giving one factor there that with cannabis, you can't really do that. Usually it's systemically introduced and there's no way to extract that out or separate that out in a lot of respects.
Yeah. Just because of the nature of the product and how it's grown and how it's processed. Yeah.
Yeah. And then also come to the point that, you know, you also have inconsistencies in the analyses that are supposed to detect these pesticides and things where you have, and I'm not going to mention any states or anything specifically, but you'll have some lab analysis where it will show that it'll say no pesticides detected or none detected, but essentially you'll have a note or a blurb stating that due to some type of, you know, matrix problems with the plant itself or whatever, we cannot actually effectively detect pesticides. So it's kind of being disingenuous because you're saying that it's not detected, but you're really saying at the same breath that we don't really have a methodology that can detect it due to these other limitations, whether it's just not effective method development or other inherent.
Prohibitive.
And so
we're looking at the sort of the regulatory process in terms of how this gets implemented. The state is, well, so we're dealing mainly right now, if you're involved in cannabis, you know, high THC level cannabis products in the states, in the US, that you're going to fall under state regulatory issues. They're going to issue some kind of set of standards. How does the testing work? I mean, I know some states are doing this. The state is testing. In some cases, you have to use a state authorized lab. I mean, how does, who actually does the testing? How do they do the testing? Who organizes that? Give us a sense of kind of the dynamics and the economics of the testing process or the assuring that you're actually meeting these compliance and these standards. How does that work?
Yeah. So yeah, just as you said, you either have a state identified or a sole state testing facility, or you have third party approved laboratories that can actually test. And the dynamic there fundamentally is kind of backwards. And the reason I say that is because really the laboratories are driving this industry. They are the end all be all and sitting there saying that something passes, you can't distribute it. And something passes, you can distribute it, or something doesn't pass and you can't distribute it. Where when you're talking about mature industries like pharmaceuticals or dietary supplements or anything like that, obviously with different levels of stringency, the laboratory is really just a confirmer of what you're doing or what you expect within your product. So, you know, company A within pharmaceuticals, they basically have in-process or in-house testing that they get these results to say, all right, quality is going to release these out to the market for distribution. They might send something out to a third-party laboratory if necessary to get confirmatory. results to say they align. But right now in our industry, in the cannabis industry, it's not that way. So it's kind of backwards, because not only is it inherently contradicting, because one lab uses this methodology and this lab uses this methodology and this lab uses this methodology, because we don't have a compendia of some recognized or all recognized methodology for extraction or for analysis in that respect.
Yeah.
So that dynamic it's a little bit screwy in my mind.
Yeah.
You know, people look at the laboratories because QC is the standard in this industry right now, which is very reactive rather than having QA, which is proactive and trying to prevent and project what's actually going to be happening down the process line within your manufacturing and things like that.
Got
so
it.
The laboratory, the whole laboratory dynamic it's a little screwy. I'm not saying that all labs are not proficient in what they're doing. I think the fact is that there's just not enough harmonization. There's not enough cross discussion about the analyses and the methodologies that we're utilizing to sit here and say, okay, we're really doing this to ensure that these products are made consistently with consistent levels of THC, et cetera, et cetera. But rather it's just, you send it to us, we're going to tell you whether you can, you know, distribute it or not due to state regulations.
Interesting. Yeah. So this is the issue. If I'm worried about a particular, you know, inorganic solvent that's used in some extraction process, you know, what's the method by which I test to see if it's there or not? And you're saying that going from lab to lab, the method that they use to test will vary. Therefore, you have fundamental differences in the results that you're getting, and it becomes difficult to compare or at least standardize. What are the limits that we're setting, and then how do we validate that those limits are met or not met? And that's a problem in and of itself.
Correct. So
yeah.
Essentially, like from my experience with manufacturers, they would say that they'll send it to one lab and they get one result and it fails, and they'll send it to another lab and they get another result and it passes. And they're like,
do people do lab shopping? get it until it passes?
Yeah. And that's inherently something you wouldn't do. I mean, any regulatory body would be like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Like you're trying to test quality into your product. It's just not allowable. We just can't do those things. So it puts them in a bad situation because they don't have consistency on the analysis end.
Yeah.
And they might feel that they're manufacturing, and they might be working within a good state of control for their manufacturing.
Yeah.
Although that's not, you know, what I've seen and have experienced or within the space in a long time, because everybody's cutting corners.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine that this whole process becomes quite political as well. So like who, you know, the people that actually decide what the standards are and who's going to do the testing and things like that. I mean, ultimately, this is a kind of a government function, right? It's a health safety issue for the general public. So the government is involved in doing this, you know, but government is, you know, obviously flawed, not perfect. And the process of making these regulations become, you know, a little bit skewed. I mean, I don't know how much insight or experience you've had or stories that you've seen in terms of the actual kind of sausage making on this. What have you seen in terms of how the regulations actually get made, and, you know, to the extent that they're actually doing or not doing the job of protecting, you know, the consumer and making sure that we've got, you know, safe and effective product?
You know, I really try to, even though I'm exposed to it, I really try to stay out of the policy side of it so much.
Yeah.
Because the political, you know, the political landscape is just, it makes everything so convoluted and problematic. Really, a lot of the problems that we're having are because of the political landscape, the policy aspects. You know, you can't implement medical cannabis programs in 90 days and expect to have an effective program that's going to, you know, ensure consumer safety and ensure that the people that are licensed to manufacture are doing so in a controlled state. There's just not enough conveyance of the knowledge that's out there. And there's a wealth of knowledge. There's a wealth of quality knowledge that you can gain from, you know, from pharmaceutical or medical devices that are just out there for guidance and for really kind of recipes for this industry to follow. Unfortunately, people just aren't educated because they don't come from that space and they're not aware of it. And a lot of times the politicians that are driving this or the political motivations are only really caring about, you know, tax revenue.
Yeah.
And, you know, and whether it's, you know, they're maybe enhancing some of their constituencies they might have
exactly.
relationships with. So it really is doing a disservice to everything. And this is why I really feel that. And I do believe that the FDA is eventually going to take this over. And I think the CBD framework and hemp framework that will be formulated by the FDA will just allow a pretty easy transition of cannabis to slide into it. And obviously with, you know, higher regulations, stronger regulations, more stringent, but still into that framework. So
Interesting. Yeah, you brought up CBD, and I'm curious to talk about that. I mean, so CBD, you know, for folks on the program here, this is sort of the cannabis plant that's in the United States, less than 0.3% THC is considered hemp. You extracting CBD from hemp is now legal under the Farm Bill. I think it was the 2018 Farm Bill finalized legalizing that. But tell me about the compliance side of that, though, because my recollection and my understanding is that who's actually controlling it? Is it a supplement? Is it a drug? Is it USDA? Is it FDA? Like all these things for a while were still up in the air. Has that been resolved, or where is compliance, or how is compliance being handled on the CBD side?
Well, the USDA for the actual cultivation of hemp has released guidance in that respect and regulations. But the FDA is still formulating regulations for CBD production that are essentially going to be going into people. So right now it's really kind of up in the air, and it's kind of like it's being, I guess, driven by kind of the auspice of dietary supplements.
Yeah.
So you'll hear like things about like, you know, you can't claim health efficacy on the labels or anything like that. That's one of the distinctions between dietary supplements and pharmaceuticals, because there's no data to show that. So you can't make those claims on a label. But there's still no regulation specifically for things like CBD right now. So they're still being formulated. So that's really still up in the air. And it's still a big risk for these manufacturers, because now it's legal. So hemp's legal, CBD's legal. So everybody and their brother is thinking they're jumping into the game, and they're not, nobody's worried about, you know, things like product liability.
Yeah.
Like if you don't have good manufacturing practices and controls within your manufacturing and your supply chain and distributions and things like that, you're exposing yourself to these product liability claims and potential class action lawsuits and you know, these people that are taking their money, their life savings or you know, small amounts comparatively to large organizations,
yeah,
investing in these companies, you know, one class action lawsuit or one major lawsuit, they're just wiped out. They're just gonna be done. And this, you know, applies to cannabis too. They're gonna be done. And even if they do make it through any type of litigation, the PR crisis and the money they're gonna spend on PR is gonna be astronomical, especially in such a competitive landscape.
Yeah. And let's talk about sort of the difference between compliance and assurance. You brought this up earlier, you know, compliance, you know, compliance being, you know, are you meeting the bar? You know, assurance is sort of testing that you've met the bar after the back. Assurance being, do you have the systems and processes in place? Why, I guess, how do companies, if I'm either in, you know, a hemp CBD based or a THC, you know, marijuana based company, how do I kind of think about this, or what's my strategy around this whole kind of compliance and assurance and building quality into my process? What does that look like?
Well, just two clarifications there, because I think they're not compatible in this respect. So if I'm talking about compliance, specifically when you're saying compliance, that means you're adhering to regulations. That means it's mandated. It's the law.
Got it.
If it's something that's a guidance or something like, let's say, ISO standard, and it's not coming from a regulatory body per se, then you're conforming to the standards. You're basically saying that these are the rules we should be following. These are the suggestions, so we're conforming to that. So you can be, when you're compliant, essentially you're just compliant with whatever is required for you to be compliant to, whatever the rule is, or whatever the rule of law is in that respect. With these companies that are in compliance, and you know, I've heard this for the past 2.5 years, when you talk about your services, they're like, oh, no, don't worry, we have that covered, we're compliant. But that doesn't tell the whole story. Like, you're compliant with grossly deficient regulations and rules. So if you don't have the foresight to be able to see the exposure that your company has when it moves into an ever more stringent regulatory environment, which is the only way it goes, it's not going to become less regulated. It's only going to become more regulated. You know, then at that point, are your internal systems and expectations, are they up to par? And really, it's going to take an effort of these companies to think outside of the box and go above and beyond. Because if you're looking to have sustainability in this landscape, and if you're looking to really withstand the onslaught of major companies that are going to be coming into the cannabis space specifically, and we're talking pharmaceuticals and other big, you know, sometimes multinational companies that are going to come into play, if you want to withstand that onslaught, you better make sure that you are up to par with everything that you need to do. Otherwise, you're probably just going to end up just getting wiped out.
Unfortunately,
it's sad, but that's the way it's really going to be.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't see, you know, it's really that risk, you know, business risk assessment and mitigation that this comes up as well, not just did I check the box of what my the particular regulations that I'm under for the state? Talk to me about how do you engage with a client? What's the process look like for, you know, a company that's looking to improve its quality assurance process? Where do you start? What are the steps? What are the procedures? What is the structure and the engagement? How do you work with folks?
You know, I think it goes to the dynamic of our company. You know, when we first came into this space, the focus was that we're like, okay, we're going to be a quality assurance and compliance firm, which, you know, quality, it's a wide breadth of activity. I mean, it touches upon every part of a regulated company, you know, outside of financials, but essentially it's like, it has its hands in everything. It's a safety net of the whole organization. So we thought we were going to be focused in on quality and compliance. Unfortunately, without mandates through regulations and without the operators really being probably aware and educated of, you know, what's coming down the pipeline and how quality can not only help protect you against product liability and things like that, but also increase process efficiency, you know, better profit margins and things like that. We didn't really gain a lot of traction with the operators, which is really where our focus will be when this regulatory structure becomes more harmonized.
Yeah.
Because that's a wealth of activity and there's so much that goes on there. Where we've really gained a lot of traction is with the, you know, financial sectors, the insurance industry and things like that, because they're the ones that are taking risk management into consideration. They're the ones that are looking at this, you know, inherently from their business models anyway. If you can provide insight into a cannabis operation or, you know, the industry per se, and give, you know, further data points of where to assess risk and where we can mitigate risk and things like that, it's valuable to them. You know, from the private equity PE perspective or investment perspective, that, you know, they want to make sure that they're investing in a company that's going to be sustainable. They want to make sure that they're applying the right valuation to the company. From the insurance perspective, they're looking at, you know, creating a robust risk management program because they don't have collateral. They're not lenders. They're basically writing policies that they're hoping that you're not going to really have many claims, or they're kind of projecting that you're not going to have as many claims and not expose them to, you know, losing money on writing policies for you.
Yeah.
So that's really where we've engaged and where we've gotten a lot of traction in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
But anybody else, we're always talking to operations. We're always talking to various people within this industry, because I think as anybody who's in this industry knows, it's a lot of face-to-face interaction, personal getting out there and talking to people, meeting people and engaging, because there's still a lot of, you know, distrust, stigma that's applied to the industry, et cetera, et cetera. So there's no marketing firm to go to and say, you know what, I'm a business to business operation. Can you give me a marketing plan and let's get marketing for this?
Yeah.
It just doesn't really exist out there for what we're doing in our services.
Yeah, that makes sense. And when you actually do start working with a company, what's the process? Are you going on site? Are you reviewing documents? I mean, how do you actually understand what a company is doing from a process and a quality point of view? And how do you, you know, kind of assess, diagnose what needs to get changed? And what does that look like?
Yeah. So if you're dealing with like an insurance company, then there's really no need besides engagement with, you know, executives or stakeholders, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need to really go on site or anything like that. But if you're dealing with an operation, then you're usually going to go in and do an initial evaluation, some type of gap assessment or assessment, depending upon what type of deliverable they're looking for, what type of support they're actually looking for. So ideally you would go into an operation because, again, they're all pretty grossly deficient.
Yeah.
And when you do your evaluation, your output might be a report that identifies, okay, you're compliant with your state mandated regulations or even municipality mandated regulations. This is where you guys stand. But this is where we see gaps. These are the data points that you're not really identifying and where you have a lot of risk, potential diversion risk for security or potential, you know, contamination risk, cross-contamination risks or even supplier risks in a lot of respects. And then you can provide that entity, that gap assessment in that respect, saying, all right, this is where you are not, this is where you're not meeting the requirements that are going to be down the line, whether it's months or a year or whatever it is. But you can take this phased implementation approach, so you're not acutely absorbing the cost of implementing quality practices and principles, which, you know, it's not cheap, but it's something that needs to be done. And if you take it in a phased approach, it's a lot more manageable and acceptable by organizations.
Yeah.
So it's usually the initial way, because the industry is not really mature enough now to hire people, I should say, reactively. So like if you're in pharmaceuticals, usually third-party consulting firms are going in because there's a problem within the organization. They're getting FDA 483s or getting a warning letter, and they need to have an outside party that has subject matter expertise to come in and help them remediate those problems.
Got it.
The industry now is not mature enough for that, but it will be happening. That's a no-brainer and inevitable.
Yeah. And if I'm an operator, a company working with, you know, cannabis products and actually touching the plant, what are the things I need to kind of do or think about, or how do I kind of make sure that I'm thinking about quality assurance, quality compliance issues, some of the questions I need to ask myself?
Well, I mean, it has to be, and we talk about this even historically in my past life in industry, mature industry, it's really a cultural change within your organization. You have to really accept and believe in the practices of quality, not only caring about your end users, your customers, and putting out a consistent and good quality product, but also your employees and having them work in an environment that they feel good to work in, that they feel that they can, you know, continuously improve and learn different things. But sometimes that dynamic, and it's, again, even in past life, it's been exposed in this respect that, you know, when you're talking about a company that's trying to make money, you know, manufacturing and things like that kind of hold precedence over quality. And unless somebody comes from in cannabis, unless they come from an industry or a company that has really had this culture, they really don't see the value in it. And they really need to, if they really care about sustainability, they really need to take an honest step back and evaluate. And if they can't see the broad picture, they need to bring somebody else in who has the ability to be able to see where they're exposed and where they can start improving and solidifying their systems. So when, you know, when inevitably it comes, they're going to be able to not only adhere to the regulations and withstand any type of scrutiny, but also be, you know, a market differentiator by, you know, putting out a high-end product that people are going to know are going to consistently deliver the same results that they're looking for as users.
Yeah. John, this has been great. If people want to find out more about you, about QA Canna, the work that you do, what's the best way to get that information?
So you can go to our website, www.qacanna.com. You can email us at info@qacanna.com, or you can email me directly at jon.malave@qacanna.com. And I'm going to throw into there, we're actually going to be doing a seminar over in Israel on March 16th and 17th. So if anybody's internationally listening to your podcast and it wants to engage, we will be over there talking about some quality related subject matters at an all day expo there, and then a one-on-one session the next day.
Awesome. Well, I'll put in the show notes the URLs and the emails, and then send me the link on the program you're doing in March in Israel, and I'll put that in there as well.
Bruce, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't mention this. We're actually just launching a QA Canna show, which I think kicks off on the 3rd of this month. We're going to be doing a monthly show, and each show we're going to be talking about a quality subject.
Perfect.
And the first half an hour will be, you know, discussion on that subject, and it'll be done by constituencies within the firm itself. And I think we're going to also have some other outside external subject matter experts coming in to provide some insight. And then we're going to leave the last half an hour for some Q&A. So hopefully there's a lot of engagement. You can see that on LinkedIn on the QA Canna company site, and you can sign up through Eventbrite there. It's free, and hopefully we get a lot of engagement because we feel it's a good way to educate people on how they can actually improve their organizations and move the compass in the right direction.
Awesome. We'll include those links as well. And thank you so much for taking time. Great topic, great insight. Clearly, you know, highly knowledgeable in the space. I appreciate you taking some time and sharing with the audience.
Thanks a lot, Bruce, for having me. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Thinking Outside the Bud with business coach Bruce Eckfeldt. To find a full list of podcast episodes, download the tools and worksheets, and access other great content, visit the website at thinkingoutsidethebud.com. And don't forget to sign up for the free newsletter at thinkingoutsidethebud.com/newsletter.